If you were here last Sunday, then you already met the characters that are in our story. Or if you're like Ethan and already know all these stories, then you've met them as well. But our main characters in the story are Jesus, of course, whom we know, and Mary and Martha. Now, last Sunday we heard the story, wrapping up our series on miracles, of Jesus raising their brother Lazarus from the dead. And these two women are sisters, and in this story we have a different tale about them. So Mary and Martha are sisters. They live in the city, a little town called Bethany, which is outside of Jerusalem. And in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the way that Jesus' story is structured, the story of the gospel, is that Jesus does all his ministry up in Galilee, in the northern part, and then at the end of his life, he moves or travels down to Jerusalem, where he faces death. In John's gospel, though, Jesus goes back and forth between Galilee and Jerusalem. Now, it's very likely that, in fact, Jesus did go back and forth, but that in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the story is told in a particular way, because everything is pointed to the cross and then ultimately to Jesus' resurrection. And so the story takes place in Galilee and then heads to Jerusalem. And so this story in the Synoptic Gospels, here in Luke in particular, is part of that journey that Jesus takes from his ministry in the north in Galilee down on his way to Jerusalem, ultimately to the cross and then to the resurrection. Now, as we think about this story, it's an interesting one. Mary and Martha, as I said, are sisters, and Jesus comes to visit them on his way to Jerusalem, and he's friends with them. They obviously know one another, and he's there visiting in Martha's house, and Martha is tending to all the needs that would come up when any visitor would come. There are things that must be done, food that must be cooked, bedding to be laid out, cleaning to do, just all the kind of stuff, right? Many of us have had visitors at our homes. We know what it means to prepare and to get ready. There's all this stuff that must be done. And so Martha is very busy doing all of that stuff. She's running herself ragged, trying to make sure that Jesus and his disciples are well taken care of and have a good visit. She feels it's her responsibility as the host to provide that kind of hospitality. Her sister Mary, though, doesn't do those things. Now, maybe she does some of them. We don't have all the details and don't know, you know, every single thing that happened. But at least from Martha's perspective, Mary is not doing nearly enough. Instead of helping with the food and helping do all the other stuff and everything, Mary goes and sits with Jesus, sits at his feet, and listens to him teach. Now, Martha is not happy about this, right? We clearly get that picture from the story. And so she goes to Jesus, and she tattletales on Mary, right? I mean, it's almost like they're kids. And she's like, guess what Mary did? I'm trying to get her in trouble, right? Martha wants Jesus to tell Mary to help Martha, right? That's what she's trying to accomplish. Or is she trying to make herself look good in Jesus' eye? Maybe it's both. I don't know. But either way, her goal is to get Mary to help her out and to do all this. And Jesus says, Martha, Martha. I love how he says her name twice. Did you pick up on that? Martha, Martha. It's like he's shaking his head. Martha, Martha. You've gotten it all wrong, right? You are so busy doing all this stuff that you've missed the whole point. Come and sit and listen and be together. Mary has chosen the better part. Now, as we reflect on this story, there are a few things kind of in the background going on that I think can help us to understand a little bit more and gain some greater understanding. So even if you're like Ethan and you've heard this story before, hopefully there's some new insight that we'll have here. So one of the things that's going on in the background is that Jesus is a rabbi, right? And rabbis were the best of the best. They were the elite in that day in Jerusalem and the surrounding areas. They had the best education of anybody. They were the most well-respected. They were people with power and authority, and everybody deferred to them. And part of that has to do with the educational system. Now, you know, we're familiar with our public education system and grades, you know, K through 12 and all that kind of stuff. That wasn't the way that it was back in those days in Palestine. It's kind of elementary school age. Most children would go to school at a synagogue, boys and girls. And they would learn to read and to write and kind of just learn the basics. And in fact, they would memorize the Torah, the first five books of the Old Testament. But for most children, that was all the education that they got. About 5 years worth of education at the synagogue with a local rabbi teaching them to read and to write and about the Holy Scriptures. But the best of the best, they would get to go on and to learn more. Now, the girls would not be invited to be part of that. They would have to go back to their house and to learn how to do all the homemaking kind of things that Martha was so proficient at, right? But the best of the best of the boys would get to continue in school. And they would learn more about the rest of the scriptures and some of the interpretations and things, and they'd be in school for several more years. They'd have some kind of tests or exams along the way to help them continue to progress. And so it was a small percentage, but some were able to continue in their formal education. Most, though, would go back and learn some kind of trade, usually from their father, but it might be someone else that they were apprenticed to. They would learn, how to be a carpenter, or how to be a blacksmith, or whatever it might be. They'd learn a trade, and so they had those 5 years of kind of formal education. But again, the best of the best would go on to school for a little bit longer and learn more about the scriptures. But then the very best of those that remained could apply to become a rabbi. And what they would do is they would actually apply to an individual rabbi. So they would, have this rabbi in mind and say, this is a rabbi that people respect or that I think is a great rabbi, and so I want to learn from this particular rabbi. I want to become his apprentice, to learn to think like he thinks, to learn to teach like he thinks, to learn to do the things that he does. And so the person would apply to that rabbi, and then the rabbi, might have a handful of people who have applied, and the rabbi would then choose, right? They would say, yes, I'll take you, or no, I won't take you, right? That's how it would work. And the kind of the official invitation that the rabbi would offer is the same thing that Jesus says to his disciples. Come, follow me. Come and follow me. And so it's not just learning that a disciple gets from the rabbi, but it's actually like an apprenticeship and a modeling. Not just like book learning, but learning to do what the rabbi does and to be how the rabbi is. To follow in the footsteps of the rabbi. To see all the ways that the rabbi lives and operates in the world and to imitate those so that you could become like that rabbi. And so an apprentice, a disciple, would be with a rabbi for maybe 10 or more years, learning from the rabbi and following in the rabbi's footsteps. And then when they were about 30 years old, a student, a disciple, could go out on their own and become a rabbi themselves, and then could be free to take on students and disciples. So I'm struck by this idea of choosing, right? By these passages in particular. Jesus tells the disciples, remember, you didn't choose me, but I chose you. When Jesus begins his ministry as a rabbi, he's wandering around in Galilee and he runs across fishermen and tax collectors and all kinds of different people. And he says to them, come and follow me. He invites them to be his disciples, to learn from him, to walk in his footsteps, to imitate what it is that he does. But he doesn't look to the best of the best. He doesn't look to those who've continued in their formal education and learned all about the scriptures and all the intricacies of the Hebrew language and all these different kinds of things. No, he looks to common, everyday folks, to fishermen, to tax collectors, to farmers and shepherds. And he says, come and follow me. Normally, a rabbi is looking at the person's education and saying, what I do is hard and it's difficult and it requires such great rigor. I need the very best of the best who has the best education, who's the smartest. And they are the only ones who are able to do what I do, who are able to know what I know, who are able to live like I live. But Jesus looks at these everyday folks, folks like you and like me, and says, I think you can do this. I think you can be like me. I think you can love the way that I love. I think you can know the things that I know. I think you can walk in my footsteps. I think you can be my disciple. Remember, you did not choose me, but I chose you. And so with that kind of knowledge in the background, we hear this story of Mary and Martha. Another thing in the background is the idea of dust. Now, there was a saying in Jesus' day about a disciple and his rabbi, and the saying was, may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. And the saying arose from a few places. As you can see in this picture, the rabbi is kind of walking along, and his disciples are following right behind him. In those days, they didn't have paved roads, and so whenever they would walk, it would just be a dirt path, a dusty path, and dirt and dust would get kicked up as they walked along. And so as the disciple followed closely behind their rabbi, walking literally in their footsteps, the dust would get kicked up and get on them, get on their clothes and in their face and all over them. And so to follow their rabbi closely, to really learn from them, to imitate them, to be like them, they would be covered in the dust of their rabbi. Similarly, when a rabbi would teach, he would sit down, and then his disciples would sit at his feet. I kind of have this image of Jesus sitting in a chair, and then all these people kind of gathered around at his feet. And again, they didn't have shoes like we have today. They wore kind of these loose sandals, and so their feet would get all dusty and dirty. And so if a disciple were to sit at the feet of his rabbi and learn, then the dust would fall off of the rabbi and get on to the disciple. Again, to be so close to your rabbi and to listen with intention, then you would be covered in the dust of your rabbi. And here in this story, we hear that Mary sits at Jesus' feet. She joins the other disciples. She is treated as a disciple, to sit and listen to Jesus as he teaches, close enough to touch him, to be covered in his dust. Some of the teachings that go along with the Old Testament are called the Midrash, and this is one from Avot, which means the fathers, chapter 1, verse 4. And this is Yose ben Yozer used to say, let thy house be a house of meeting for the sages, and sit in the very dust of their feet, and drink in their words with thirst. That's how I picture Mary, sitting there, leaning, hanging on every word that Jesus says, drinking it all in, taking it all, and learning and growing and becoming like Jesus, just as each of us is called to do. I think more about this story, and it is kind of funny that Ethan mentioned already knowing this story, because it's true. This is a story that many of us know. And many of the stories that we tell in church are stories that we've already heard, especially if you've grown up in church and been in church for a long time. But one of the things that I've discovered is that often when I go back to a story that I already know, I still see something new. God still speaks a word that is alive into my life and into the situation in which I find myself. Often when I've thought of this story of Mary and Martha, where there's this contrast between the two of them, right? Martha is so busy doing stuff, and Mary is content simply to be with Jesus. This contrast between doing and being. And Jesus says that being is enough. But this thing that Mary does, sitting with Jesus, it is subversive when you think about it. Disciples of a rabbi were not allowed to be women. Women were not allowed to continue in that formal education after those first few years of learning the basics. And so for Mary to sit and to take the place of a disciple was radical. And Jesus didn't dismiss her or tell her not to, no. In fact, he said this is a good thing that she is doing. It goes against the conventional wisdom of the day, which is the very next verse in this midrash. Engage not in too much conversation with women. Jesus is content. He's happy to engage in conversation with Mary, to teach her, to share with her, to show her the ways of life and goodness and the way of love. I'm struck even more by the motivations behind Mary and Martha and what they do. And that's really what hit me this time as I read the story. I think about Martha and what it is that motivates the actions that she takes. Why is it that she wants to do all this stuff, to make sure all the food is prepared in just the right way and things are set up and the house is perfectly clean and all that? Why is she so concerned about that? I can relate. I'm a perfectionist at heart. I find it hard to just sit and be. I busy myself all the time. When I'm at home, I'm always finding a little chore to do, a little project to think, something to clean, something to do, all that. I think it's why I like going to the movies, because I can't do that at the movies, right? The people who work there, they don't like me picking up popcorn and stuff, right? They don't, yeah. So I can just sit when I'm at the movies and be and not have to worry about the other stuff. But when I'm at home, I have a movie on, I got something else going on. I'm folding laundry, I'm doing whatever. I'm busy. And so why do I do that? Why did Martha do that so long ago? And I think, and I'll just speak for myself, and maybe this is the case for some of you, but I'm trying to earn something when I do that. I'm trying to prove that I'm good. I'm trying to prove that I have a purpose. I'm trying to prove that I have worth and value because I can do all these things. I think that's what Martha's doing. She's trying to win Jesus' approval by doing a good job at the stuff that she's doing. She thinks that if she serves a great meal and she has a clean house and she does all these other things, that Jesus will love her and like her because of what she's done. But Mary, she knows that she doesn't have to prove anything to Jesus. She can simply sit at Jesus' feet, and he loves her, and he accepts her. And he's willing to teach her and to show her what it means to walk in his footsteps. And friends, it's the same for each and every one of us. We don't have to prove anything to Jesus. There's nothing that we need to do to earn the love of Jesus Christ. Jesus already loves each and every one of us. He invites us to sit at his feet and be covered in his dust. He invites us to walk closely behind him, to learn the ways of life and love. So friends, may we set aside our own need and desire and the lie that we need to prove ourselves. May we be like Mary and simply accept the love that is offered to each and every one of us through Jesus Christ. Amen.